So good morning, Michael. I'm delighted you've agreed to do this interview, as you've been so much the inspiration behind the history group and started this all history program going. So let's get to you, and let's start with, when did you first come to East Meon? When did you buy a house in East Meon?
Well, in 1980, the IBA, the Independent Broadcast Authority, put up for tender the ITV stations, and I was part of a tender that was successful in winning TVS, or Southern Television as it then was. I was the director of programmes, so that was a reason for moving south. I chose East Meon because I'd heard a lot about the Meon Valley, and found the Tudor house the first time we went wrecking, made an offer which was ridiculously low, and the lovely lady accepted it, much to the dismay of her estate agents. And she got her own back, because when she left the house, she took everything, the electric light fittings, everything. It was such a low price, and she always said it was because she liked our family.
Oh, lovely.
So
yes,
we moved in 81, and August 81, and in August 80, and TVS started on the 1st of January 81. I was incredibly busy for the next 3 or 5 years as director of programs, but then I left TVS. Sorry, tractor. Won't be many.
So, where were you based?
Everywhere. I was in Southampton, I was in Maidstone, I was in London. I spent 27 hours a week in the back of a car. I even had a television set on my back, attached to the seat of the front seat, so I could watch it from the back seat.
So obviously this came after your BBC career.
Yeah, I was editor of Tomorrow's World at the end.
Well, I have to ask you about your famous Wikipedia entry, which is this, to be the guy who sacked Raymond Baxter.
Oh dear, is it? I never look at it. Yes, I will be famous as the man who sacked Raymond Baxter. You don't want that story.
But, never mind. Okay, so I'd imagine that you started as a weekend cottage sort of thing, but no, it was actually your home.
Yes, in fact, it was sort of a bit of each, because the kids were still at school in London. So Tricia stayed up in London during the week,
right,
and she came down on a Friday night. And as she came down past Bealey, and you heard the owl in the road and the bells ringing, she felt, this is it. The children never really went for East Meon in a big way. They missed London.
Yeah.
They went to Beedale's and hated Beedale, but they never really took to East Meon in a big way, but we've loved it.
Hmm. Then, of course, you mentioned the Tudor house, which was an old history house, and we'll get to the history stuff later on, but you then had to do a massive restoration.
We didn't do it for a while. We added cladding and insulation, as Jonathan is now doing again, to the eaves.
Jonathan
Ironmonger. But in the 90s, we decided that Tricia needed a studio, and we got permission from the conservation people to raise the roof about 6 inches to give some airspace, and we built a studio. It involved putting in...
Is that on the first floor?
Yeah, above the kitchen and the
right
back stairs. And it involved putting in steel pillars, which aroused a certain amount of antipathy. We offered to paint them brown, but the conservation people said very sensitively, well, there's a lot of different periods in this house, so this is the 20th century. Paint them battleship grey, so we did. So that was the main thing we did. We always knew that we hadn't bought a house, we bought a project. There was an awful lot of conservation to be done. The other thing we did was, when Tricia's mother died and left us a small amount of money, we had a Tudor garden put in.
So that's the Knott garden?
That's the Knott garden.
Right.
And we got the son of a friend of ours, Stuart and Betty Bussell, who was a landscape designer, and his wife, to design it. They did a lot of research and as to what Tudor gardens were like. And it was lovely. And Tony Perkins dug it. It was like Battle of the Somme. We got a digger in to level it. And then Tony Perkins, that November, dug it and planted it.
Okay.
And I haven't looked back.
So it's a mixed garden of both vegetables and flowers? And
no, it wasn't then. We were just flowers.
Oh, right.
Our successors were Chris and Jane Cobley, and they knocked down the the Plaisance Mound. Tudors had a Plaisance Mound, which you sat on and admired things. So we put the spare soil at the end of the garden and called it a Plaisance. They saw through that and they flattened it and made that a vegetable garden. No, we just had flowers.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's what I'm trying, I can't turn off.
So back to the house. I always seem to see things by Edward Roberts. How did you start working with him on the Tudor house?
I can't remember how I met Edward. Oh yes, I do. Edward is a very distinguished architectural historian, medieval architecture, and he was at what was then King Alfred's College, which is now University of Winchester.
Mm.
And he'd written a book called Medieval Hall Houses. Or he was about to write it and done a lot of research. And he used to bring groups round. He asked if he could bring groups round to see it. So we were on his itinerary.
Mm.
And I would sometimes be asleep in the garden and I'd hear this murmur of... He taught us so much about the place.
Mm.
And then when we founded the history group, he was our first proper speaker.
Right.
And has been our friend and mentor ever since.
Mm.
He lives in Cheriton, is now retired,
right.
And is getting, like me, a bit old and grotty.
Won't travel at night, I think you said.
Sorry?
Won't travel at night, I think.
No, he doesn't want to drive at night.
Okay, so obviously once you came to Eastmead, you then got very much involved with the village, and you went on to the parish council and became chairman, yes?
No, I didn't become chairman.
Oh, you went chairman, sorry.
No, very, very much not.
Oh, right.
Let me tell the story more slowly.
Right.
In the 90s, my company in Winchester, I set up my own company called Workhouse Limited.
Was it after TVS then?
This is after TVS,
right.
86 onwards.
Right.
And I set it up. I bought out a little video company which went bust and was in a lovely little converted evangelical church in St. Peter Street. And got very involved very early on in the internet. We were absolute web pioneers. That's why we never made any money. We were far too early. And as a result of that, I was very keen that the village should have a website. So I built a website for the village back in the late 90s.
So when you say build, how did you build it?
Very badly. I had
basic HTML.
No, right. Can't have done. I must have had. I think I got somebody from the company to do the coding,
right?
Because my company was still going then.
Mm.
But I did the design,
yeah.
And I asked the parish council in to see it, and they came into the Tudor house and they didn't know what to make of it, of course, but they couldn't stop it, so it was never an official website. I always wanted it to be part of the parish council and the Mian Matters, the one single website. Never achieved that.
Eastmead now has, I'm going to say this, a stupidly large number of different websites.
Yeah, no.
Even the village hall has its own website, which is farcical.
It is, and they don't relate to each other.
Yeah.
Anyhow, and Mian Matters went on. And
then there's the gardening club website.
And the history group.
Anyhow, two websites.
I would say that the history group came out of that because I had a page devoted to history and I got so many inquiries.
Oh, so it was just on the website?
On the website.
Okay. Well, obviously we'll talk about that later on. Yeah.
And then I then agreed to sit for stand for the parish council. And my first job there, I had done a thing called a village design statement as a non-councillor, which is still regarded as the sort of seminal influence on the design.
So in those days, parish councils did a parish plan and a village design statement,
yeah.
Pair of documents.
That's
yeah.
Right, and I sort of did both together.
Right.
And then that led them to want me to go on the parish council, so I did, slightly reluctantly, where I did the next stage, which is the parish plan, which I did in the early 2000s. And of course, I was always proposed, I've developed the website, still banging on about it. And the then chairman, Michael Atkinson, was absolutely hostile to anything to do with the internet. And in fact, he wrote me the most acid letter, a really ghastly letter, accusing me of wanting to take over the parish council and turn it digital and all the rest of it. I was really hurt, and I showed it to Alan, I showed it to Philippa, and they both agreed, and they had words with Mike, who I think regrets writing it. But that was the end of my parish council.
Right.
But I did do the parish plan, which was the next stage,
right.
And then came the recent neighbourhood plan.
Right.
So and Alan is kind enough to say that the design statement and the parish plan are exactly what the neighbourhood plan has evolved from.
Right. So when did the development of the green take place and all that? Was that in the parish plan originally?
That was before I... was it after? No, that was before I joined the parish council. No, it must have been after. It was in 2001, 2002. I wasn't anything to do with it, or if it did, I slept through it. what did come out of it was the moviola.
Right.
Because parish councillors used to get a bundle of papers, which they leaf through, and I happened to spot a note from somebody called Philip Walkley, who was offering parish councils the opportunity to bring a cinema to their village. And I had already said to the village hall, you need a cinema.
Right.
And they'd agreed, they didn't know how to do it. So I got Philip Walkley round. Shall I tell you a bit about the...
Actually, that was one of my questions.
Moviola is the most extraordinary outfit. I was later chairman of Moviola, and my meetings would begin. I'd call for an expression of interest, and it would go as follows. I am married to him, but he is living with him, because Philip and Christina were the founders. Philip then went gay and went off to Spain. But he was an extraordinary man. He always wanted to do a bus that would go around the village as well, like they did in Scotland.
Oh, right.
The cinema bus.
I've seen that in the Highlands.
But that, yes, that's right. But that wouldn't... Tilda Swinton's involved. But that wouldn't work financially. So instead of that, he personally went and sourced the films. He would go to all the film festivals. He'd draw up an agenda or a menu of about 30 movies, which we'd watch the trailers. He'd do notes, and each village would have a committee and choose its village. The moviola would send out a camera kit and a screen and audio, and the village hall would set itself up. And in 2008... he came to Eastmere, and the first time he did it, he insisted on putting the audience on the stage and below, and the screen at the end. We had The Constant Gardener as our first film. It's a great success, but that didn't... we turned it round. And it has been a huge success. About 10 years later, 8 years later, I applied to the Film Council, British Film Council, for grant to get our own equipment. So now we just hire the movies. Moviola still does the sourcing. I don't know what they're doing at the moment in lockdown. But the point about Moviola is it's a great social event. People who couldn't get to the cinema or wouldn't, too much trouble, and wander down, or once a month they meet up. And somebody described it, I think the Sunday Times described it as a monthly movie with wine.
Yeah, a glass of wine beforehand definitely helps.
And jewelry. and the ice cream. Yeah. So it's been great. I've enjoyed that very much. So that came out of the parish council, but then I left the parish council, went my own sweet way.
Mm. Okay, the other thing that I was immediately told when I came into this area about 13, 14 years ago was you were the broadband guy.
Yeah. Well, this arose because... my company, Blackrod, became Workhouse, and then Workhouse... Blackrod was Michael Rod and Michael Blackstad Beale.
Right.
And then it became Workhouse, and we had evolved into new media in a big way. We were absolute pioneers of the internet, along with another company called Victoria Reel. And when I left Workhouse, I was appointed by the government to advise in two sectors, the travel with hospitality business and the aerospace industry. The broadband was on its way, and they should want it. I was called a broadband ambassador. They didn't want to know. I mean, it's crazy. This is 2001, 2002. I also sat on a government parliamentary steering group, which looked into the local loop unbundling of PT.
Well,
I formed the impression that BT was going to dig in. So in about 2001-2, I established, discovered an agent, a little company on the Isle of Wight, run by a man called Chris Verinder, who had set up a network, satellite delivered to a radio network. And he came and he climbed all over the village, and we established a link to the Aramisca satellite, to the barn at Garston, which is up above the village, and then line of sight to a number of houses. Only those in line of sight could get it. Bearley, for instance, wanted it but couldn't. And we did this for, we stuck in two routers, one in the barn and one at the roof of the George. And every time there was a storm, the routers would go, so we'd have to go and reset it, banging our heads on the beams, etc.
What sort of speed did you get then?
Oh, we got about, we got more than BT did when it arrived. I think we got about 15.
15 megabits per second?
Oh, that's good. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
No, it can't be. It was very good.
Can't have been. Yes, it was certainly better than dial-up. And we charged £13 a month. And it made a little bit of money, but it was a hell of a lot of work. Now, the first meeting we had to see who was interested, the George, and a chap called Robert McCatter turned up. I'd never heard of Robert, never seen him. Now, Robert...
A useful contact.
Well, he was and he wasn't. He was, actually. He was at the time a telecoms analyst at, I think, Barclays Capital.
Yeah, he was.
And he said, you don't need to, because BT will come. And we were both right. BT did come about 2 years later, but in the meantime, a lot of Eastmeon people were very happy, especially those who had businesses or wanted.
Well, I can now complete the story for Eastmeon for you on broadband. Bob is currently trying to sort out how to use the latest round of pseudo finance from the government to connect distant parts of Eastmeon. I've been involved in doing language from Ramstein, and we are circulating a list of all the places that don't have it, where the lines might go for fibre, who might pay. So yeah. This is the final stage. You know. The question I've got to ask you is, since you're involved in the early days of broadband, why the hell didn't it become a national infrastructure project that the government funded?
I have no idea. Our job was to do a paper that MPs would understand.
Right.
And I was very proud of it, actually. I mean, I was just a small business in Winchester, and the other people there were BT, BBC, Sky, all the big boys, and British Gas. And no, British Gas weren't on it, that's right. But British Gas was a client of ours.
Must have been electric, because they were providing the cables for the
route. And there were ministries and...
What about the canals people?
No, they weren't there.
Oh, they were going to run fibres up the canals?
They weren't on the grid. But British Gas was, BG was very keen to get involved. So I used them as my resource. So the BT guy would give 16 reasons why not. The next meeting I would give 16 reasons why, because British Gas fed me with the data. So it was great fun. And a very good chairman, a Sheffield MP called Richard Allen. And he was an engineer. I don't know what happened to him. But it was very well chaired. And George Younger in Andover was the Tory hotshot, and Douglas Alexander was the Labour guy. So they had some good people on it. And in fact, they did succeed, all the paper, and did succeed in forcing BT to do it a bit quicker than they might have done.
But sadly, the papers are just out, and we've dropped another 7 places in the European broadband table.
No, it's ridiculous.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
Right, so let's get back to Eastmeon. And I was going to kind of finish this segment off by saying, what's the biggest changes you've seen in Eastmeon? But another thing you told me about was that there was a Catholic chapel in Temple Lane.
Yes, there was.
Really?
Yeah.
Until when?
Until about 15 years ago.
Oh.
It was the old Zohar chapel.
Oh, right.
And it then a Baptist chapel.
Yeah.
And then it became Catholic in about just after the war. And it was run by a succession of visiting priests. One was a rather dashing army chaplain from the US Army, who was US Navy, sorry, who was attached to HMS Dryad. And Bill Darcy, who was a great hit with the ladies and wrote a book which featured East Lear. And our Catholic parish priest in Petersfield was very upset by this book because it had far too much sex and violence. That book, he said. And then he was succeeded by a very elderly Irish priest called Canon Devine, who was in Boughton and was, he was in his 90s, and he would conduct the service sitting down. But it was great. It also had some of the prettiest wives in the village whose husbands happened not to be Catholic. So I had, including, of course.
Okay, so let's get back to you in the Tudor house for how many years?
39.
Right. And then you sold that house?
No, sorry, I wasn't. I was there for 30 years.
Right.
32 years.
Right.
And then we sold it because it was getting too much.
And so you then moved into the new property
in the Green? In the Green, yes, which I was very pleased with the Green in the sense that when I went to see it, when they were building it, they had my village design statement on the table and they had observed every one of the recommendations that we made. And I think it is less ugly than most modern developments because of that. It also works extremely well as a community. So we loved it there. Tricia missed it very much when we moved. No, I did too. But then I got Parkinson's and Tricia got dementia and we couldn't cope there. So here we are.
So here you are in Bishopstoke. It's just so sad there was nothing closer to the village.
I know. I fought a battle to try and get permission to develop in Petersfield a site on Frenchman's Road.
Oh God, yes, I know one.
But it wouldn't have been the right place for us because it's what are they called? I can't remember the name. Anyhow, it would just have been flats,
right,
with a restaurant, no care facility,
and shelter accommodation.
Yeah, shelter accommodation.
So, how do you look back on your time in East Lean?
Oh, with great regret at having left it, with great love and affection. Quite exciting. Yeah, some other little things I did, like there was a woman in the village called Molly Dicker, who was a very fine artist, and she had done a picture of the church, and when I was on the parish council I said, you need a logo, and so I persuaded Molly that we could use her logo, and I got Paul Martin Design to adapt it, so the parish logo is something to do with me as well.
Oh, good.
So I left a small mark on the village.
Oh, you left a large mark. You're sadly missed in the village to this, well, obviously to this day. Okay, thank you very much for that, Michael, and all the best in Bishopstoke.
Thank you.